No, I don't think you're cynical at all. I mean, really, when you start to talk about how you're going to handle preparations for any kind of situation, whether, you know, you think there's going to be a multi-year bull market in stocks starting, you know, as what was transpiring back in the early 80s, you know, where things were ramping up, or whether you're anticipating a multi-year bear market in stocks. Really, what you've got to consider first is, what is your time horizon? You know, is your time horizon a year? Is it 5 years? Is it 10 years? Obviously, at this point, once you get out past a year, it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen. I mean, we know how this is going to end, but fitting the time together is very difficult, because you've already seen some rather extraordinary measures, if you will, to keep this thing together as long as it's been kept together. Left to itself, we wouldn't have much of a financial market structure right now. They've really had to do an awful lot, and they would say that that's a good thing. I would say that no, that really was a bad thing. It should have just been allowed to run its course back in 2008, and there would have been a lot more pain. But you know what? We'd have something better now. All these banks and brokerages would hopefully have been out of business, and the stranglehold would be released, and you know, we could build something up, you know, that was a little bit more honest, and then, you know, fight like crazy to keep it. But, you know, as far as predictions go and as far as planning goes, you have to be flexible, you have to be willing to be flexible, and you can't marry ideas. You can court them, but don't marry them.
I see.
Because things are changing that fast. You really have to keep an open mind, and that includes me. We all have to keep an open mind about what we're trying to do, what are the goals that we're trying to reach, and what period of time we're trying to operate in. And that, I mean, that's the best advice I can give. I know it lacks a lot of specific kind of stuff, but you really have to answer those questions and figure those things out first. Otherwise, the specifics don't even really matter that much.
Yeah, I see. Well, you know, I'm 68 and a half years old. I love the half. The reason why I say half is because when I was 3 years old, I'd always said I was three and a half. I never said I was three, you know? And I think I'm reverting back to my childhood. So I say, how old am I? They say I'm 68 and a half years old, you know? And I still look forward. I don't look at the next 2 or 3 years, or, you know, during the later part of my retirement, which I'm not really retired. I mean, I'm semi-retired, but I work 24 hours a day. But my horizons are always way out there, you know, 5 and 10 and 20 years from now. I think that's the only way that I can cope with what is going on, because what I do when I think that way, I say, okay, this is the path that I should be on. I'll stay on it. And it may not be the most profitable on a day-to-day basis if you were a trader or whatever, but in the long run, you know, I ain't leaving this place broke. And I guess that's my philosophy, and it just makes me sleep at night. And that's because everything seems to be so malleable. We are the most unusual time in all of history, worldwide, regarding currencies. No one's been down this road before collectively, and this is why I think we see all these fluctuations.
I mean, really, when you think about that, though, that just means we're going to have a collective failure.
Right, and a collective failure.
You know, we've all been there individually. You know, we've all had currencies that have failed. That's happened many, 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 many times in history. So this time it's just going to be bigger. That's all.
Yeah.
It's not going to be isolated to one country. It's going to go across continents, because we've weaved the whole thing together. So when one goes down, we all go down.
Right.
You know, if Europe goes down, guess what? New York is next, because our banks are swimming in the same cesspool that the ones over in Europe are swimming in.
Well, what do you think?
And if our banks go down, then you're going to have Asian banks going down, because they're swimming in the same cesspool that ours are in.
Right. That's the way I see it.
So it's just a bigger failure, that's all. Yeah.
But what you hear is the response to that is that, oh, no, those countries are so much smaller than we are. The effect would be negligible. We can handle that. But yet they go into absolute panic, because, you know, we could handle it. Now, who we is, I don't know. But the individual banks, I don't think, could handle that, and that's where the problem is.
Well, you think of little Greece, little itty-bitty Greece, being able to hold the world at the end of the plank for how long? Well, we're going on 2 years now. I mean, really.
That's true, right?
Well, you know why? You know why? Because it's all leveraged up 40 or 50 to 1. It's not just little Greece and their $100 billion that they're the size of their notional problem.
Yeah.
It's that times 50.
Right.
You see where the problem is here?
Right, yeah.
Because there's derivatives on all this. There's credit default swaps. There's options. There's all kinds of chicanery going on. These clowns in these banks, as soon as they got their TARP, they started playing the exact same game that they were playing in 2006 all over again.
Yeah.
They went right back to the casino table and put their chips all on red 19. And that's what they did back in 2006, and they got burned. And they said, you know what? Well, so what? We'll get burned again, and we'll just run to Congress and threaten all kinds of nasty market crashes and everything else, and they'll give us another $1 trillion.
Right.
Or whatever it is this time.
Right.
I mean, this is what we've taught them this.
Yeah.
This is why it was so dangerous to start bailing these people out. Because once you do it, now you're committed.
Is there
now? How many? What are we going to do? Are we going to do $100 trillion? I mean, really, where's it going to end?
Right. The notional.
That's the problem. Yeah. You know, it's like a kid, and you got this kid, and you're trying to, get him to do the right thing, but you keep, backwardly incentivizing them for doing the wrong things. Well, what do you think they're going to do? They're going to do the wrong things.
Right.
If the kid does something wrong and. You slap the kid on the hand and the kid starts bawling, and then you buy him an ice cream cone because you feel bad about slapping his hand. Well, you don't mind the hand slap. He's going to start bawling again so he can get another ice cream cone.
Right.
Maybe that's a bad example, but I mean, psychologically, I think that's what we've done. And we've done that with people in this country. We've taught people that, you know what, it's okay to live beyond your means because the people that didn't, they'll pay for it. And the government will bail you out, and they'll send you checks, and you don't have to worry about it. I mean, this is what we this is our society.
When did we start doing that, Andy? At what point in the 20th century did we go from a working, savings, investing society to a overworked, overspending, over indebted society? I mean, it started somewhere, and there had to be a change, a sea change somewhere where we went from one to the other. Was that after World War II when we started to realize that other countries, when they started to industrialize, we really could not compete or we could only sustain an economy if we just kept on creating more debt? Where did this all start, in your opinion?
Well, I think my opinion, and there's probably people who would disagree with this, I think that the seeds were planted during the Great Depression. You saw government take huge encroachments into people's lives. All these new government agencies that were created, and they were make-work agencies for the most part. I mean, some of them did some good things, don't get me wrong. I mean, Tennessee Valley Authority, Works Progress Administration. I mean, they put people to work, and they built things that at the time the country needed to move forward. So, and they did it with savings, by and large. I mean, yeah, there were some deficits running there, too. But there were some savings involved also. So, I mean, it wasn't necessarily this malfeasant thing that everybody kind of thought it was. But I think that was the seed that was planted. And then, a little while later, you get to the 50s and the 60s, we decided we wanted to have these great society programs. We wanted to have welfare and Medicare and all this other stuff. And... well, now the national bank, the piggy bank's empty now.
Right.
So now it's got to come from gold reserves, and we ran those down and we paid for that. But I think the seed started, and maybe it was even before that. But I think the Great Depression really was where a lot of this started. This idea that the government was going to make it all better, and the government was going to take care of people. And really, I mean, if you take a look at the Great Depression, the government did nothing but make it worse.
Right. Right.
And I wrote about that several weeks ago, and boy, did the hate mail fly on that one. from left and right alike,
interestingly You're kidding me.
Enough,
that's,
Joe.
That's
you get a kick out of that.
Wow. That's interesting. I would not have guessed that at all.
Yeah, it was interesting. you know, how that all went, how the reaction to that went down. But, you know, at any rate, you know, I think the government intervened, made it worse, did basically all the wrong things for the most part. And that's really what we've done since, because governments are set up to please in the short term at the expense of the long term, because elections are in the short term.
Right. By the way, Andy, we have a caller who's been on hold now for some time. You want to take this call now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Take the call.
Caller, you're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from and what your question and comment is, please. Caller, you're on the air.
You call out his area code, maybe.
It's a cell phone, 111. You're calling probably from a cell phone. Caller? Oop, I hope we didn't lose you. Caller, you're on the air. I assume you're using a cell phone because it's just showing on our board as area code 111. Okay?
Probably Skype.
Yeah, that's right. What I'll do is, caller, I'll put you on.
But I got a different area code.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I mean. It doesn't show. Your first name, please, and where you're calling from.
Sky from Indiana.
Sky from Indiana. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. I don't have a question at all. I just want a T-shirt. No. Seriously, is there any silver lining to this? Because, I mean, now that I'm ready to go out and raise lambs, these conglomerates that are, you know, whatever we, you know, we're the golden goose or we're the cash cow or whatnot, are they going to want to, you know, eventually push us and push us till the whole thing falls apart? Or is there some sort of, you know, future something, control or something that'll save us from all the doom that's ahead of us?
Well, I mean, for my part, I look at it this way. The Fed has been actively buying our government's debt. My assumption here is that they would want to try to keep the goose that lays the golden eggs alive a while longer so they could reap some benefits of ownership, ill-gotten ownership, but ownership nonetheless. That would be my opinion, that they'll try and just ease this thing along. I really don't expect the economy to get very much better over the next 2 to 5 years based on policy decisions and based on upcoming policy struggles. I mean, we haven't even seen anything with Social Security and Medicare yet. You know, the unfunded liabilities from those two programs are massive. And that has not even been, that surface hasn't even been scratched yet. So there's going to be a lot of big, big, big debates over the next several years about these things. And I guess I saw today there was somebody being considered for a trustee or whatever, the Social Security situation that believes in rationing, my tongue got tied there, some health care. So this is the kind of stuff that we have coming down the line, unfortunately. And, you know, this is the kind of stuff that people need to be taking into account, you know, when they're looking at monthly budgets, savings, and that kind of stuff. You can't assume that the pension payment is going to be there. I just saw the pension benefit guarantee is in the hole like $25 or $26 billion. I mean, it's a fortune. You know, these holes are all over the place. That's the problem. You know, see, really people need to plan on living simpler and doing it now, because it's easier to do it on your own than it is to have it forced on you. I mean, that's just the way I look at it.
Oh, I agree. As another side note, what's your opinion about people that are migrating from your big banks, as it were, that keep merging, to your individual credit union?
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think people are tired of getting charged $5 to make a cash withdrawal at an ATM machine, and credit unions tend to be a little bit more favorable in those regards. I have an account with a credit union. They've always done very well. I've never borrowed money from them, but their rates have always been very, very competitive. And, you know, from what I understand from people that have done quite a bit of business with them, there's a lot of advantages to smaller credit unions over these big banks. These fees being one of them. And frankly, I think people have had enough of the Bank of America's, the Citigroups, and that taking tax bailouts from taxpayers and doing these types of things, and then turning around and sticking it to us with high interest rates on credit cards, fees, charges, hidden costs, whatever. I think people are getting a little tired of it. So I think migration away from them, that's a good thing. That's the free market at work, and hopefully, it puts some of these guys out of business. But unfortunately, I think they'll just ask for another bailout.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for your insight.
You're welcome. I hope it was beneficial.
Yes, it was. It was.
Thank you, Scott, for calling in. And please, and stay on. I'll just place you on mute. If you want to ask another question, just press that one button, okay? Thank you very much. We have a couple other calls on the line, but you're not pressing the one button. Remember, if you'd like to ask a question, just press the one button, and we'll put you on the air. I guess
press one, because then Joe will have to give away all his T-shirts.
I'm going broke giving away T-shirts. I am having them redesigned.
Hey, I exhorted a fellow this afternoon to call in, and I know he listens every month, and he knows who he is, and he knows I'm talking about him right now, because we just emailed this afternoon. Press the one button. I want to hear from you.
Okay. I won't put anyone on the air until they do press the one button, first of all. It's not fair. It's not fair at all. Now, you commented a little bit on first, let me do one thing. I am so late with station identification, everyone's going to give me heck. Hold on, please.
You're listening to Liberty Talk Radio. Political talk derived from a historical perspective. Not always palatable, but good food for thought. Pure libertarian talk with host Joe Cristiano. LibertyTalkRadio.com.
Folks, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. With us this evening, we're pleased to have Andy Sutton, economist and chief strategist for Sutton Associates, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, as our return guest speaking on the economy. And for your benefit, by the way, do not be bashful. Do call in 888-773-4496. That's 888-773-4496. That's a toll-free number. We pick up the tab. Don't worry about it. And also, if you have any questions, just send them to comments at libertytalkradio.com. If you're listening to us from a podcast or a download or archives, please do so, and we promise we'll get back to each and every one of you. Andy, we have about 10 more minutes left. Would you comment a little bit more about what you see in the price of oil and other commodities, especially silver and gold? What's your opinion? Some of my friends are very concerned about the retrenchment of gold and silver going down substantially before it continues to go back up, and they're very, very concerned about their holdings and their investments in gold mining and silver mining stocks.
Well, here's the thing on gold and silver. We probably hit that first, just because I think that's probably going to be, more relevant to a lot of people. Here's the thing. Gold and silver were both flying high not too long ago. And then expect more of this. I'm going to preface this by way of introduction with saying expect more of what I'm about to tell you to happen moving forward. What you had is you had the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, the CME Group. They stepped in, and what they started doing was manipulating margin requirements. And basically what they did is they made it much more expensive, and they've done this many, many times over the last 6 months or so. And they've made it more expensive for people to hold on to gold and silver contracts. And what that has done is that has driven people, the marginal investor, the guy who was listening to somebody like Jim Sinclair or people like that and saying, hey, get in there, buy your futures contracts, and then take delivery. And don't let me forget to talk about Solente before we're done here.
Okay.
If I forget. So that was the idea. These marginal investors got blown out of the markets. They couldn't afford to maintain the requirements for margin and maintenance on their contracts, so they had to sell them. And it caused this mass influx of contracts into the market. It drove the price down. They've hit it several times. They hit it hard back in April and May. They hit it hard again in August. And they've really kept it down. They haven't hit it since, but there's a lot of fear at this point that, if things get too far out of hand, upwards 1900 on gold, 42, 43 on silver. They're going to hit it again. The problem is that only works so many times, and you're going to flush the marginal investors. There's going to be people that are going to be in those markets that are going to stay in no matter what.
Right.
Secondly, what's also going to happen is they're going to blow apart this union between the paper markets and the physical markets. In other words, you'll see paper, silver, for example, maybe trading at 33, and coinage, bullion could be trading at 50. They'll lose the market. They lost it back in 2008. Paper silver was $9.75 an ounce. Silver eagles were going for almost $17.50.
I see.
So there was a huge disconnect there between paper and physical.
Right.
Here's my theory. Now, we've known that COMEX silver available in the warehouses for delivery has plunged dramatically in the past several years. Gold, same thing. Here's my thing. This MF Global thing, they had Gerald Celente on, the trends forecaster. He's
right.
A good guy. He's a smart guy, knows what's going on. I think he's right about a lot of things, but he got cleaned out.
I know.
There's a video, because he was buying these futures contracts and with the intention he was going to take possession.
Right.
And he was supposed to take possession of a bunch of gold in December. I've heard through other sources that there's been other people that were supposed to take possession of large quantities of bullion in December. And I'm wondering if these warehouses aren't starting to run up against their limit as far as running out of actual metal that they can tender for delivery. And if that didn't have something to do with MF Global. That's a speculation at this point. It's my opinion. I don't know if there's, I don't have anything to back this up. It's just connecting the dots and wondering if there's not something going on, because I know that there's been a lot of chatter about their ability to continue just pushing up these huge amounts of metal for delivery. They don't have it, and they're starting to run out. And I'm wondering if there might not be something to that whole thing that's going on right now. So time will tell. Maybe that wasn't it at all. It's one of those things that makes you wonder.
Yeah, Gerald Celente seems to be getting more and more angry. And his rhetoric is...
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Yeah, and I mean,
apparently he had from what he said on Russian TV, he had a six-figure account.
Right.
And now it's being held by a trustee. He got, and his positions were closed. So he's not taking delivery of anything.
Right.
Well, and he got a margin call to boot.
Yeah, but why did he get a margin call? I mean, he didn't, he had enough to back it up.
Because his money wasn't there anymore.
Oh, you mean...
His money wasn't there and the price went down. So they said, you don't have enough money in your account to cover this, so he got a margin call.
Okay, all right, yeah, I see. Okay, very good. Oh, boy. Okay, well, that's a nice way to clean up.
And again, I want to preface this. This is speculation at this point.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any knowledge of, any kind of a COMEX or LBMA default on any of this stuff on the December contract. It's just, with all the stuff that's going on there, and that's been brewing for a while,
right.
It's just one of those things that makes you go, huh?
Right.
So, just to make sure everybody knows where I'm at on that whole thing.
Yep.
Oil, that's another whole situation. We've talked about that in a letter a number of times. It's over $100 again, $102.18 right now. I'm looking at the contract. Again, you've got this perception that the dollar is getting weaker. You have these situations in Saudi Arabia. They're bragging, we can do 10.5 million barrels a day. Hey, wait a second, guys. You've never done 10.5 million barrels a day. Now you're saying you can just do it at
right.
the drop of a hat?
Right.
You're using millions of gallons of seawater just to get 9.5 million.
Right.
So a lot of people, I think, are starting to become very skeptical of the sustainability of these cheap energy sources. Now,
right.
$102 is cheap, by the way.
Yeah. Well, what most people don't realize is that the oil that is being extracted today yields a much lower amount of gasoline and diesel fuel, distillates, than the easy stuff, the sweeter stuff. And so one barrel today is not equivalent to the one barrel of 20 or 30 years ago. So we're getting less and less out of each barrel, and each barrel is costing more money to extract, and there are fewer barrels. And when you add that up, guess where we're going? I mean, it's obvious. There's always a story about, oh, there's a field, in the middle of the Pacific, and it's got 50 billion barrels, and no problem, we'll get that out, and we'll be flush. And then you realize that, yeah, that will last 3 months, you know, if you can get it out in the first place. The big thing is Brazil. They say, oh, they got all these reserves out in the middle of the ocean off the coast of, and not actually off the coast of Brazil. It's tens of miles off the coast of Brazil. But what you don't realize when you read the small print, it is 5 miles below the surface. That's where they have to drill 5 miles below the surface to get to the oil. Now, we can do that, but it's probably unprecedented, and it has to go through 1 kilometer, which is like two-thirds of a mile, of salt, which is incredibly difficult and obviously corrosive, to get that oil out. They say the cost of each barrel is going to be absolutely phenomenal if they get it out. But yet people on the other side say, see, Brazil got plenty of oil, no more problem.
Right.
You know?
That's what you're hearing all over the place. I mean, an old friend of mine, geologist friend of mine, he's deceased now for about a year and a half, Zapata George. I'm sure people have heard of him.
I talked about that first drill hole. Yeah.
And he basically said they put a $1 billion hole in the ground. $1 billion to get a hole in the ground to see what was even down there.
Right.
There's no way to get it up at this point. There's no way to get it to shore. The technology's not there yet.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, the oil might be there, but we can't get it right now.
Right.
So what? We don't have it.
Right.
It's not there. Yeah. You got the same problem here in the Western United States. I heard a guy on a show not too long ago was saying that there's a Saudi Arabia's worth of oil under Colorado, and it's 1,000 feet under the ground. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? That is a conspiracy right there.
Right.
That's a tinfoil hat. I mean, how could you keep something like that quiet? I mean, you literally have guys that are drilling wells for drinking water hitting that.
Right.
I mean, that's how close to the surface it is. I mean,
that's right.
You hear this kind of stuff, and the mainstream media just carries this like it's gospel, and nobody's proven it. There's no, the Bakken, $4.5 billion. Now they're saying, oh, it might be worth 10 times that much. Well, where'd that come from? Where's all the new techniques and research and studies and all this other stuff? You just don't say all of a sudden. And that's what happened here with this Marcellus up here in Pennsylvania. It was a minor deal, and some guy from Penn State comes out with a report, and all of a sudden you got guys drilling holes. They're like a bunch of mad dentists up here with these drills.
And
you have to wonder, is this really even there?
Yeah,
there's some wells that are producing and all that good stuff, but is this the solver? Is this the silver bullet that everybody is being led to believe it is? And, I get skeptical when all of a sudden it goes from one thing and then it's increased by an order of magnitude of 10 or 50 or 100.
Right.
I get skeptical.
Right.
Maybe I'm just nuts.
Yeah. No, I think you have to be nuts to keep your sanity, Andy. Andy, we are out of time, actually, I want to thank you so much for being on our show once again. It's been a terrific program. We still have a couple of people on call-ins, but they still haven't pressed that one button, the magical one button. Andy,
I know, and I got an email from that one fellow, and he said he didn't feel quite comfortable pushing that one button. So we'll just hope he does so next month.
Okay. All right. We'll just have to punish him or something, or find a way to punish him. Andy, if you would, for the sake of our listeners, if you would spend a minute or so on how they can reach you, learn about what you do, and so that we can, get you on there so people know who you are.
Well, I mean, first I would refer people to the website. It's www.sutton-associates.net. There's a lot of information up there. All of these discussions you and I have are up there. People can listen to the archived ones. The archive goes back, 6-8 months, something like that. They can listen to these episodes, and see what I've said and what's happened and what hasn't happened or what's maybe happened. They can do that. There's articles there, the My Two Cents series is all there, and people can read that, and there's going on 6 years of that now. That's stored there for people to read. You know, they can just get an idea of what I'm about. We've got our legal disclosures there and all that sort of thing too. And you know, if people want to talk to me, there's a contact form there on the website, or they can just call the office. It's 888, and the number is 633-5420. And they can call Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. And I'm always available, you know, through the email as well if they use the contact form on the site. So check the site out, see what we've got, see what we have to say, and see how you think that's matched up with what's taken place so far. And you know, I'd love to talk to you.
That's great, Andy. I hope you will accept our invitation to return the third Wednesday of next month once again.
Absolutely, Joe. I look forward to doing this, and you know, like you said, it maybe takes a little insanity. Well, I enjoy commiserating with people of like-mindedness because it really helps me to know that, hey, you know, we're not all alone out there.
We're not alone. You are not alone. Very good, Andy. Thank you so much for being our program. It's been a great program tonight. I really appreciate it, and I'll be talking to you.
Thank you, Joe. I enjoyed being here. You have a great night.
Bye now. Well, geez, I mean, he is absolutely terrific. I just love having him on the program. I look forward to the third Wednesday of every month. Folks, do give Andy a look-see to Sutton-Associates.net. He offers a tremendous number of services. Many of them are, I mean, they're available to you. Some of them are free, you know, and then you can subscribe to his some of his services, which are very reasonable. I know there's a million subscriptions out there, literally a million. His are so good and so logical. They help you help put a framework about what you should be doing. So do please give Andy a look-see. Well, this is the end of tonight's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. Ranch Shakers Audiology is a family hearing practice at 3227 East 31st Street in Tulsa. They may be reached at 918-749-7711. Call them for all your hearing needs. You'll be glad you did. Folks, you can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends, and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, folks, there is no middle ground. Freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated. Your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control the ride in your every move. Folks, I love riding my motorcycle. I don't want anyone controlling that baby. Ron Paul has a sign in his ass that says, "Don't steal." The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.